WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
The following programming is sponsored by Carol Captus Holloway. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Start. I am happy to be here to share an interesting topic today, something that I think everybody should tune into. But before I do that, let me thank you for joining me here at Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We are live on the air at 860 AM. We are live at WWDB radio internet under Tell Me More, or just click on the link to listen live on Odyssey as well. And you can always send me your questions and comments on Instagram and Facebook under Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. So thank you. Yesterday was the Holocaust Remembrance Day. A lot of people may not have even noticed, may not even care, may not understand exactly what it is, but it is time for us to stand up and pay attention with all that is going on in the world. I want to spend most of the hour talking about the Holocaust, the new Holocaust Museum in Illinois, and anti-Semitism, because a lot of people think they know what it is, but they really don't. I also want to address the Holocaust deniers and talk about who they are and why they don't believe what really happened in the world. In the end of our hour, we're going to address our small businesses with Aaron Stark, who will be talking to us about the impact of entrepreneurial spirit for small businesses and why we should keep small businesses in mind for shopping. But long ago, April 4th, April 5th, yesterday, April 5th, Sunday, was Holocaust Remembrance Day. And we here in the world vowed never again. Yet we find ourselves here in the middle of terror in mass annihilation that is raging on. Fortunately, not here in the United States of America, but around the world. And we have to stand up and take notice, because though we vowed never again, a lot of people say, well, that'll never happen here. But people don't realize that things like this could absolutely happen. And while some believe in horror of group extermination was only limited to the Holocaust during World War II in Germany, genocide is happening right now all over the world. And we just today, there is hopefully some type of standstill, some type of peace agreement going on with Netanyahu and Israel and Hamas and Pakistan and Gaza and all these horrible things. And a lot of us listen to the news and we think, well, like I said, not me, not here. And yet we have so many college campuses under siege, so to speak, by people that are trying to get their voices heard. Israel was observing Holocaust Remembrance Day from yesterday, Sunday evening, through tonight, Monday evening. And the events began at Sunday, 8 p.m. at the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum with speeches from Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Isaac Herzog. And it's really important that we pay attention to this, because these are things that are happening now. They are happening here. And as we look at what is going on around our colleges, it gets me upset to find out that I believe in the freedom of speech. I believe in the right to protest unless it gets violent. And it upset me to hear that so many of the protesters were actually people that were coming in to cause damage. They weren't actually college students. And I'd love to hear what the statistics are on how many of those people were actually college students compared to protesters, professional protesters, as I want to call them right now. So it's really important that we pay attention and understand and pray and hope that Netanyahu will accept the Hamas offer and take care of getting the Palestinians and the hostages out of the Gaza and making sure that this, for lack of a better word, crap stops happening. It's been going on over and over and over again in our world. The history behind this is thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. And people don't realize, like, again, people think that it can't happen here. When you look back on Auschwitz, which happened in Germany, it's a place where you can go to see what actually happened. I think those election deniers should go there and take a look. I had a good friend of mine who had gone there and shown me pictures. This is many, many years ago, of what he and his wife saw. And it was so hard to look at the pictures, not even being there, and not shed a tear. Because this is genocide. This is killing people. And it can happen here. I really believe that it can happen here. And Holocaust Remembrance Day is supposed to bring Israelis together in their grief, even if it's only temporary. It's so important that we reflect on what has happened and realize that there's a polarization going on in this country and around the world right now that should not be happening. An increased feeling of sadness is going on around the world. It's just pivotal. There were findings of a new study by researchers at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, known as the HU, led by a doctoral student, Tamar Gur, and colleagues under the guidance of psychology professor Iran Halperin, and it delved into the emotional dynamics surrounding this day, marked this Monday on this year, that detected a substantial decline in affective polarization during the commemoration. And they published their paper in the Journal of Political Psychology under the title, A Group That Grieves Together Stays Together, Examining the Impact of the Holocaust Memorial Day in Israel and Affective Polarization. So I suggest to people that maybe if you want to know a little bit more, pull up that particular paper. But it's so important that we recognize that this is something that is happening every single day around the world. And we really, really do need to understand what is happening in our world. I pray for peace. I pray that people put their weapons down, and I pray that the hostages can be released and all those that are currently held in captivity with Hamas, and for the safe return of the soldiers that are fighting on the border of Israel and throughout that area. And Herzog said, the president said, we embrace the bereaved families who have lost loved ones during the war. That's how he began the ceremony yesterday. This is not an ordinary year or an ordinary anniversary remembering the Holocaust. Israel is at war. Over 200 days have passed since the beginning of the Israel-Hamas war. We will not rest until our sons and daughters return home, is what he said in the opening of his speech. This is a tough situation. This is a tough place where we are today. And I want to share with you, what is anti-Semitism? There's so many interviews online that you can look at. There's so many videos that are out there that explains anti-Semitism that has persisted for thousands of years. Thousands. That's before the United States even existed. Anti-Semitism is a prejudice against or hatred of Jewish people. In the United States, anti-Semitism incidents continue to rise every single year. This year is probably the worst that I can recall seeing it. Hatred of Jews or Jewish people, I hate to use the word Jews, can take place in many forms, including all the violent attacks that we see. It appears in our daily life. Do you know how to recognize it online, in social media, or in conversation? Does anybody really realize when they're doing it or when they see it being done? Hatred of Jewish people has existed for thousands of years. The Holocaust, in which the Nazis and their collaborators murdered 6 million Jews in Europe, was one of the worst examples ever of anti-Semitism. But it didn't start or end with the Holocaust, and that's what makes anti-Semitism one of the oldest and most persistent forms of hatred. At least I believe it is. Maybe other people don't necessarily think so. So in remembrance of all of this, I wanted to share with everybody about the groundbreaking new museum that has just opened in Illinois. It's the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. And it opened May 1st, and it's just a groundbreaking experience. You can go online to view it, as our contributors will tell us about. So entitled the Spaget Family Voices of Genocide Exhibit, that is what it's called. And the importance of the exhibit sheds light on the stories of survivors and descendants of genocides in Armenia, Guatemala, Bosnia, Rwanda, Burma, and the common conditions and warning signs that can lead to genocide. The museum's founding principle is remember the past, transform the future. Recognizing the critical signs can be a step towards intervention and prevention. A lot of people just don't even realize that genocide and anti-Semitism is going on right in front of their face. Maybe they're deniers, maybe they don't want to see it, or maybe people just don't understand how to see it, which I find really amazing here in this country. So I wanted to share with you a little bit of information about the two people that are coming up on our show that we will be talking to about the new museum in Illinois. And I am really happy to be able to bring their story, share their voices, and talk about all that is happening with the museum, and continue after that, after our commercial break, after our interview, to talk about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust deniers. I put them right up there with election deniers. So joining us on our interview today are, I have two people with us, Kelly Zaney. She's the Senior Vice President of Education and Exhibitions, the Project Director of Voices of Genocide Exhibition. So she'll be joining us. And then we will also, and she has over 20 year tenure. Zaney has become an internationally recognized leader in Holocaust, genocide, and museum education. She serves on the board of directors for the Association of Holocaust Organizations and Education Institute for Human Rights. She also serves as co-chair of the Illinois Holocaust and Genocide Commission. She's won multiple awards for her educational and human rights work, including the Samuel Goldsmith Award for the Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Chicago, the Damien Award for the Graduate School of Loyola University in Chicago, and the Carl Wilkins Fellowship, where she worked alongside national leaders to create and strengthen a permanent anti-genocide constituency through both advocacy work and influence of U.S. policy. So very important. She's got a long background there, and her recent publications are The Teaching About Genocide, Insights and Advice from Secondary Teachers and Professors. Also joining us will be Bernard Kirkishov, and he is the CEO of the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center, and he is a national nonprofit leader with specialization in children's justices and minority rights. And when he was 13 years old, Bernard and his family fled anti-Semitism and ethnic violence in his native country of Azerbaijan. And I know I'm just killing these names, and came to the United States as a refugee, right? Okay, refugees are welcome. What shapes his worldview is his courage and conviction of those who took risks to help his family and refugees like them. He believes that education and community engagement are key to inspiring young people and the public to stand, to take a stand against anti-Semitism, racism, and all other forms of hate-fueled violence, genocide, and just the atrocities that are happening today. Bernard served as the national COO of Cradles to Crayons, and I have supported that organization. It's a national organization providing critical essentials for children living in poverty and crisis situation. And under his leadership, the agency launched Cradles to Crayons Chicago. And those are branches all over the United States. Responsible for multiple markets in his hubs are Boston, Chicago, and Philadelphia. Bernard oversaw fundraising strategies and public engagement programs to more than double the annual number of children served. So by the end of his tenure, Bernard's Cradle to Crayons was back on track to reach more than 750,000 children every year. He also serves as the CEO of Equality Illinois, the Midwest's largest civil rights organization, advocating for LGBT equity, and Bernard led Equity Illinois to pass several pieces of historic legislation, including the Marriage Equality Act, bullying prevention measures, and a ban on so-called conversion therapy that serves as a model for legislation nationwide. Under Bernard's tenure, Equity Illinois grew to become the nation's second largest state equity organization. Bernard was honored as a great immigrant by the Carnegie Foundation, and he was recognized by NBC as one of the Pride 30 LGBTQ global leaders alongside the Prime Minister of Ireland. Bernard is a lawyer by training. He practiced corporate law before joining the nonprofit sector. He also served as an international law clerk for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Israel. He earned his JD from the University of Michigan and Master's in Theological Studies from Harvard. So I'm bringing you a background of two extremely knowledgeable people here to join us today to talk about the Holocaust Museum, and be prepared to hear the story why this museum was so important. I know that they're both online and ready to talk to us.
Good afternoon, Bernard and Kelly. Thank you for joining us. How are you both?
It's great to be with you.
Good to be with you.
Oh, good to be with you, too. I have a lot of questions for you, because this was a big undertaking, a very big project that you guys are talking about. And my first question is, tell us why this museum is so important, Bernard, and why it resonates with you.
You know, when I was 13 years old, my family and I fled ethnic violence in our native land. And as we traveled across several countries and thousands of miles, it wasn't just us. It was other refugees who had fled before us and who shared notes with tips for their survival. It was other people we encountered along the way who showed us kindness and support. And this kind of focus on individual stories and humanity is what the Holocaust survivors who founded this museum had in mind. This is how they wanted to remember the past and to transform the future.
Okay. And we have so much of this going on today, and there's so many Holocaust survivors, I'm hoping, or deniers. I shouldn't say survivors. I should say deniers. Kelly, can you tell us about this new exhibit and what its purpose is?
Yeah, so the Spaget Family Voices of Genocide exhibition uses the testimony of five witnesses of the genocides from Armenia, Guatemala, Bosnia, Rwanda, and Burma to not only talk about how and why genocide occurs, but really the common conditions and early warning signs that visitors to this exhibit through these stories can begin to identify. And the hope is that by identifying those signs, by identifying those common conditions, we can ultimately work towards prevention.
And why is it so important that we share these stories?
I think there's so much that we can learn, not only from history. You know, each genocide is unique in its time and place, but history has the opportunity to instruct us and what we can learn. So learning from that history, but I also think learning from the lessons and taking the strength and courage and resilience that these survivors have to share, and all five of them across the board in their interviews and in the testimony shared in this exhibition talk about in particular the power of not only hope, but of education, and that education is really key to continued awareness and prevention.
You know, Kelly, it's interesting that you say education, because we have so much controversy going on in our country today that stories like this, and Bernard, maybe you can answer to this, stories like this are being banned in schools. Why do you think that is, and how can we help prevent genocide like those in this exhibit from happening again?
Yeah, it really is important to focus on stories like this, on individual stories. Sometimes when we think about the Holocaust or genocides that happened before or since, they almost feel inevitable, these too hard to comprehend moments in history. But it is by focusing on individual stories of perpetrators or collaborators, bystanders, rescuers, resistors, or victims themselves, is when we understand these histories at a human scale. And that's the way that we could learn the lessons from the past and be able to apply them to our current lives.
So we're talking about lessons from the past, but you guys believe that knowledge of early warnings may lead to genocide, that is essential for us to prevent it. Are there early warning signs that we here should pay attention to?
It's such a great question, Carol, because I think what's so important is that, you know, oftentimes when we're reading the news, newspaper or online or watching just, you know, the nightly news or, you know, listening to radio shows, we often hear about reports coming in from the ground in particular countries and don't really have the education or awareness to understand that when we're seeing us versus them ideology, when we're seeing perhaps the instability of war or a dictatorial or authoritarian regime or government that ultimately is using the shadow of that to commit this egregious crime. And so being able to be aware of that and then to not only inform ourselves, but to let our elected officials know, to hold awareness events so that we're getting involved and intervening well before that mass violence and killing begins. And I think that what is really key and taking away from this exhibition is that there are opportunities before that killing begins to get involved and to intervene.
So, Kelly, you feel that the museum is definitely educating the public about all these different genocides where people can really get facts?
Absolutely. I think that the Spaget Family Voices of Genocide exhibition, as we said, you know, we're focusing on five key case studies, but the exhibition also addresses 20 other global genocides across geography and time. It is without question not an exhaustive list. Unfortunately, the list is quite long. But our hope is that we're raising awareness, particularly through the testimony of the survivors featured in this exhibit, and inspiring and empowering our visitors to want to learn more about those genocides as well as others.
It's definitely something that people need to see when they're in Illinois. Where exactly in Illinois would we find this museum, and where can we go for more information?
We are in Skokie, just outside of Chicago, the city of Chicago. And for those who can't visit us in person quite just yet, they can view our exhibitions at ilhistorymuseum.org and learn more about the exhibition and our other programs that way.
That's great information. Bernard, I found it very interesting that you specialize in children's justice and minority rights. Is that something that you are, that's what you do today? You're actively involved in that?
So I am CEO of the Holocaust Museum, and in my prior professional roles, I used to run civil rights and child-focused organizations. But this is part of my history. This is my way of recognizing that I am here today because so many selfless people have done the right thing to create a community, a society, the world where my family can flee to America and rebuild our lives.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that both of you have come on board to share this information with us, because with all that's happening right here in the United States of America, I think bringing some reasoning and some explanations to this particular museum is important, and particularly at this point in time. So one more time before I have to let you both go, where can we go for more information again?
So visit our website, ilholocaustmuseum.org, to learn more.
So easy. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Bernard, for spending some time with us and shedding some light on a serious issue and a wonderful museum for people to get some facts. Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. Thank you.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.
And I encourage you to please go to the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center online. It's ilholocaustmuseum.org. And as soon as you open it up the page, it'll say, take history to heart, take a stand for humanity. Shouldn't we all be doing this in these volatile, toxic times that we're dealing with right now, particularly here in the United States with an election upon us and the naysayers that deny elections and deny that the Holocaust even existed. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I would like to share with you a little bit more about Holocaust denial and who these people are. You're listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets,
our house. Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
And we are back. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. I can't even say my name. As we talk about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism. So there's a lot of people out there that are Holocaust denial people. They don't believe it ever happened. So according to Wikipedia, Holocaust denial is an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. Yes, another conspiracy theory that asserts that the Nazi genocide of Jews, known as the Holocaust, is a fabrication or exaggeration. Holocaust denial includes making one or more of the following false claims. Now, people, is all you need to do is go see Auschwitz and you will understand this was real and this happened. Do your homework. What is wrong with people not looking up the history? Why is there this need to wipe out history and replace it with what people want, what some people think it should be? instead of the truth. The truth is so important. And think about it. Every single one of us here in the United States, except for the Native Americans, are refugees here. We came to this country. We invaded this country. Yes, there was an annihilation of the American Indian. So let's talk about what these Holocaust denial fabrications and exaggeration false claims are. So Nazi Germany's final solution, I have air quotes up, was aimed only at deporting Jews from the territory of the Third Reich and did not include their extermination. That is not true. Nazi authorities did not use extermination camps and gas chambers for the mass murder of Jews. That is not true. The actual number of Jews murdered is significantly lower than the accepted figure of approximately 6 million. That is not true. There were 6 million Jewish people murdered. The Holocaust is a hoax perpetrated by the Allies, the Jews, or the Soviet Union. Oh my goodness, people, stop. Get your facts. Get an education. Do your real homework. You know, and when I was talking to our guests, I highlighted the word facts because there's so many people out there that can't put their hands on or don't want to put their hands on real facts. They deny, deny, deny. The methodologies of the Holocaust deniers are based on a predetermined conclusion that ignores the overwhelming historical evidence to the contrary. This is direct from Wikipedia. Scholars use the term denial to describe the views and methodology of Holocaust deniers in order to distinguish them from legitimate historical revisionists who challenge orthodox interpretations of history using established historical methodologies. Holocaust deniers generally do not accept denial as the appropriate description of their activities and use the euphemism revisionism instead, revisioning what is happening. In some former Eastern Bloc countries, Holocaust deniers do not deny the mass murder of Jews, but deny the participation of their own nationals in the Holocaust. Holocaust denial is considered a serious socialite problem in many places where it occurs, and it is illegal in Canada, Israel, and many European countries. So with that being said, Holocaust deniers prefer to refer to their work as historical revisionism and object to being referred to as deniers. So they're trying to rewrite and re-envision history and facts and trying to form it in their own indicative basic strategy of deceit and deception to try to make you think something else happened when they try to shun the facts. So, with that being said, it's important to understand that this is going on every single day. There's a great series on the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. And it talks about the evidence of the Holocaust from the first Nuremberg trial, combating Holocaust denial, the origins of the Holocaust denial, where it came from, and combating Holocaust denial, evidence of the Holocaust presented at Nuremberg. And then it goes on. It's just a really good series. And just to sum it up, Holocaust denial is any attempt to negate the established facts of the Nazi genocide of European Jews. The articles in the series that I'm talking about will explain what the Holocaust denial is and why it is dangerous, especially today. What evidence serves as conclusive proof of the Holocaust, what the origins of the Holocaust denial are, and what Holocaust denialism is. So it's so, please check out this series on the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's definitely a must read for understanding what is happening in our country. Some people just don't want to deal with what happened. They want to deny it. Most Holocaust deniers want to wash away the stain, as they say, of Nazism in an attempt to make Nazism an acceptable political alternative. Think about who's trying to get into office and be president. What do you think that the citizen Trump, the past 45 president, will do to people in this country if he was to win the election? He salutes like a Nazi. I hate to say it, but he does. And he is only going after vengeance. And so we can take a lesson from what happened with the Holocaust. You know, what can happen here? It's just a big lie that it didn't happen. The big lie is especially painful for Holocaust survivors and all those who lost loved ones to the Nazi mass murder and who confronted people that when you talk to them, they deny that any of this ever happened. I just cannot believe that this is that people here in the United States are even trying to rewrite history. So it's important that we understand that this has happened. It is real. It is documented. There is proof. It is a multifaceted layers and layers of proof. And people need to understand, not just through the evidence and the proof, but the firsthand stories of survivors who lived through the horrors of the death camps, as well as those that were able to escape, as well as those that have lost their parents or their brothers or their sisters. There's films out there that are real that bring this into light. Sophie's Choice pops into my head right away. It's important to note that no Nazi crime, war crime suspects who stood trial in the post-war years for their misdeeds ever claimed that the crimes of which they were accused were fictional. Instead, they argued they were only following orders. Okay, so they didn't deny that it was fiction. They just said they were following orders. So the evidence is, in fact, so overwhelming that on October 9th, 1981, Judge Thomas T. Johnson of the California Supreme Court took judicial notes of the Holocaust ruling that, and I'm going to quote what he said, "The Holocaust is not reasonably subject to dispute. It is capable of immediate and accurate determination by resort to the resources of reasonable, indisputable accuracy. It is simply a fact." So it is true that Germany had fewer than 600,000 Jews when Hitler came into power in 1933. And the majority of Jews murdered by the Nazis, however, did not live in Germany. Okay, so think about that. They resided in the countries which Germany invaded during the war, especially Poland and the areas of the former Soviet Union, where millions of Jews once made their home. So think about what is happening today, people. Please, this is real. This is happening every day as I stand here on the radio and talk about this. It is real. And please do your homework. Don't be a denier and realize that history does repeat itself and will continue to repeat itself if we don't stand up and listen and be active and talk about what is happening in our country. We have an election coming up in what, less than 6 months? And we need to, whether you like the choices or not, they are the choices that we have. And when you hear stories like this about Nazi Germany, about the election deniers, about anti-Semitism, about the Holocaust, about Auschwitz, about the 6 million people that were killed, don't think for one minute that it can't happen here in the United States of America. People are saying, you know, politicians are saying, oh, we have guardrails in place. We have guardrails. It'll never happen here. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Yes, it can. If we don't stand united and stand up for what is right and stand up for kindness and stand up for all of these different things. It can and will happen right here in the United States of America. So, you know, I'm going to get off my soapbox right now because this is something that's really serious. And this is something that we really need to pay attention to, especially with the news that is going on right now as we speak, with a possible treaty that can happen in Israel and Gaza and the Hamas. Please, I pray that that happens, that we can put all of this to end. I can't say with the war that's happening in Israel where I stand, because everybody's wrong. I know that I stand against Hamas for the things that they have done to the Palestinians and Israel and the fighting back. I don't think Netanyahu is right in all that he is doing. So I can't pick a side on this. I just know it's wrong on all fronts. And it's important that as we have a surge in anti-Semitism, particularly throughout the world, but particularly in our country, it is time for us to stand together and to fight what is happening around the world, and realize that here in the United States, when we have college students speaking out, they're speaking out for a reason, and they're speaking out on all sides of this argument that is going on and this war that is going on in Israel and Gaza and with the Palestinians. My personal opinion is make it a two-state nation. Let everybody live in peace, really. But other than that, I think I'll get off my soapbox now, and we'll go on to talk about something that's a little bit lighter and a little bit more fun. Okay, so let's just all pray for peace around the world. It's really hard to do. I say my prayers every night. It's really sad that this is going on. So just keep in mind that it is Holocaust Remembrance Day. It started last night, supposedly, you know, according to the time clock. It ends tonight, and it's something that is really important. And wouldn't it be wonderful if on this Holocaust Remembrance Day, with the ceremonies that are going on in Israel, that maybe we can have a peace treaty, hopefully permanently, but even if only temporary, to help the people that need the help. With that being said, you're listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets, our house.
Listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. If you missed any of the information talking about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, please listen to this podcast later tonight or at any time at your convenience. There's a lot of information in there. We're living in very tumultuous times right now. Speaking of tumultuous times, next week on our show, we are going to have the nation's largest veterans organization asking all Americans to share the American Legion's mission to be one to stop veteran suicide. As Armed Forces Day and Memorial Day approach, the American Legion National Commander Daniel J. Schaefer is asking Americans to be one to stop veteran suicide. So we're going to spend some time with Commander Schaefer talking about it and discussing suicide prevention for our veterans and what we can do and how we can get involved and is it working. He has joined us before. It's a really important topic. So next Monday, please join us here. It's a very important topic as we're, you know, gearing up for Memorial Day and all of those things that, you know, people go out and celebrate, which is not necessarily a celebration. So let's make it a little bit lighter now. So here we go. Small businesses. You know, last week I talked about this at the end of our show. I love small businesses. I think they are so important to what we do every day. In our businesses every day, I support small businesses. And for more than 60 years, the Small Business Association, SBA, has celebrated National Small Business Week, which was last week, but I didn't have a chance to get Aaron Stark on board to join us until now. And I definitely want to talk about small business is serving more than 850,000 small businesses across all industries, and ADP has a unique view into this important population and the issues that are on the top of the mind for small business owners. So Aaron's going to be joining us in just a second, and he leads ADP's small business service operations for the Eastern region here on the East Coast, and his team is responsible for the end-to-end service experience for over 200,000 small business clients with more than 18 years in the HCM industry. Aaron has held many leadership roles at ADP with responsibilities including sales, operations, and strategies. He's a native of Staten Island, New York, and he currently lives in New Jersey right next door, an avid golfer, and when he's not spending time with his wife, Marissa, and his three children are traveling the globe, he spends it golfing. And he is does a lot to do fundraising for his foundation with his wife, the foundation that benefits pediatric heart disease. So joining us now is Aaron Stark. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm doing great. You're talking about one of my favorite things, which is small businesses.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yep, they're so important that we spend our money with our small businesses. Can you tell me what is going on with the Small Business Association these days?
Yeah, so
administration. I said it wrong. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. ADP has a unique view when it comes to the small business community. We have a little over 850,000 existing small businesses that we service on a daily basis. We onboard over 150,000 new businesses every year to ADP. And then we give them a survey and we ask them what's top of mind. And a third of them told us that growing their business is top of mind, which is somewhat broad. So if you dig in just a little bit deeper, things such as talent, when it comes to, you know, acquiring new talent, skilled talent, how do I retain my best people are a lot of questions that we're getting today. How do we navigate the ever-changing regulatory compliance? And last one is around technology. Like, how do I make sure that I'm tapping into existing technology or emerging technology that can help me scale my business?
Well, let's talk about some of those things, because I know my sister recently posted for hiring online, and the quality of candidates she got was shameful, very shameful. So how do we go about as small businesses screening our candidates and getting quality candidates and like you said, dealing with emerging trends? What's happening in all of those areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think when you said it's shameful, you know, skilled talent, I think, is what we're seeing as a trend emerging, where it's not just about finding people, it's about finding the right people and then providing them. It used to be like, how do you hire for skill? Hire for will and train skill. And I think one of the pieces that we saw in our survey is that a third of the candidates that our clients are seeing, they actually don't have that. They don't have that that will, right? Like their work ethic and in the interviews that they're having, you know, tends to stand out to them. So now it's a matter of how do I find the right skill and find people that are willing to do the job. And, you know, I think tapping into employment marketplaces that enable you to find quality candidates quickly and leveraging technology, applicant tracking services, that ADP weaves into our bundles and our run product, you know, enable small business owners to navigate the endless arena of candidates that they could hire and find the right ones quickly or as quickly as possible, and weeding them out by using and leveraging some of the technology based on the profile that they're looking for.
Okay, good information there. Small business owners have to adapt to what's going on. And I recently did an interview talking about small businesses and AI in that environment. It's constantly changing. What are you seeing on your end, and how can we help our small businesses stay up to date and in touch?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, when it comes to staying up to date, is making sure that you have the right partner as a small business owner, that you've kind of created an ecosystem of, you know, advisors, consultants, and also the vendors that you select that can help introduce you to the right technologies that are applicable for your business. You know, I mentioned the 150,000 clients that we serve, that we onboard every year. 50% of them come from the accountant community, and they wow. still trust ADP, right, to have that domain expertise in the payroll and HR arena. And what we've seen from a Gen AI. Is it enables our small business clients to kind of codify information, where all of that, you know, domain expertise and institutional knowledge, where, you know, large organizations used to deploy payroll departments and HR departments, you know this technology is enabling a small business owner to scale all of that information, put it into their natural language, so that way they could be the subject matter expert without actually having, you know, a license or a certification in those particular arenas. And, you know, we've started to weave that into our applications in Run, where you can just type something the way that you normally type it into our search bar, and it's able to convert that into, you know, our language, but find the right resources and provide it back to you in a digestible format. And that's kind of the cool way in which we're seeing a responsible path of leveraging these emerging technologies.
Aaron, you talked about government rules and changes and things like that. What are you seeing that our small business owners may not be aware of?
Well, one that we are starting to prepare for right now is coming in July. It's going to be applicable for all small businesses across all 50 states. And if you have, as a small business owner, an employee that is salaried today, on July 1st, based on how much you're paying that employee, they may no longer meet the threshold in order to be exempt for overtime. And that is going to, you know, potentially be disruptive for many small business owners, where I'm going to have to make a decision to either increase the salary that I pay that employee to maintain their exemption status, or do I pay them hourly and then start to embrace technology like time and attendance applications, which we've actually seen a surge here at ADP, like 40% growth in our clients' interest in those type of tools, where I could pay them hourly. And if they incur overtime, I'm able to control some of my largest expenses, which tend to be in wages and hours paid.
Why do you think the government's stepping in with this? I mean, is this a system that's broken, or is it something that's been working?
Listen, it's a great question. And, you know, we have an entire government affairs and compliance division that tends to, you know, deal with, you know, the government agencies as it relates to the why behind it. But what I can tell you is that, you know, the small business community is beyond resilient. And, you know, they tend to find ways, especially if they have the right advisor, as I mentioned before, and the right partners, which ADP prides itself in providing them with the right resources, where whenever these changes take place and the perception of being good or bad, they're ready to take them on and find ways that they can navigate through it. And I'll tell you that even though some of them may be viewed as hurdles, you know, if I switch gears just ever so slightly, like some of them are benefits. There's over 3,000 incentives and tax credits that are available to the small business community. The challenge is navigating which ones are applicable for you, you know, based on where you are, what type of employees that you hire, and what type of work that you do can qualify you for some of these benefits. So if you go to adp.com/tax credits, You know, we have a bunch of different experts that can help you find which ones are applicable for you to inject capital back into your business to afford, you know, more ways for you to offer competitive wages to your employees. And if you had to invest in that technology that I mentioned before for the other regulatory changes, you know, kind of, I don't want to say balances itself out, but there are ways that you could take advantage of the changes too.
Okay, good information, especially for small businesses to be aware of coming up in July. A question for you. According to your study, 21% of people are focused on pay equity or pay transparency efforts. We hear about that in big corporations, but how does that translate into small businesses? And is there that pay equity and transparency in smaller businesses as opposed to larger businesses?
It exists. I would say that, you know, I think a common misperception is that even though some of these rules and regulations might be more prevalent in the larger, more enterprise level organizations, that those same rules don't apply to a small business. And that's just not true. And, you know, we try, if you go to adp.com/spark, or we have an entire research institute that stays ahead of a lot of these legislative changes. You know, you could see how many of them are applicable to the small business community. But the cool thing about technology and especially data in today's era is that it's way more accessible, digestible, consumable. It's also in a consumer grade experience where with a couple clicks of a button, we've provided our compensation benchmarking tool to the small business community where I can, based on my the state that I'm working in, based on the industry that I operate in and the type of job that I'm looking to hire for, I can find what the equitable wages are for those particular functions and make sure that I stay compliant, you know, with, you know, pay equity, pay transparency. So that way, if I'm posting a job or if I'm promoting somebody, you know, I have all the right tools and resources, which again, technology is making a lot more scalable for the small business community today.
And Aaron, you're talking about tools and resources, and there's so much talk today about inflation. And I feel like a big percentage of inflation is larger companies doing corporate gouging, as opposed to giving their employees the wages and keeping prices down because their profits are huge. We don't find that with small businesses. So how are small businesses tackling that when you have these corporations out there doing this price gouging and people are saying inflation, 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 when it's, in my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's really not inflation.
Yeah, I would tell you that we have a Treasury department that probably can speak more articulately to this subject. However, in the conversations I'm having with small business clients today, I think they're looking for opportunities, regardless of how they combat inflation or how they deal with price gouging, is ways that they can find other opportunities to inject capital into their business where if they can't take it head on, well, how do I offset it through things like the Secure Act, where if I want to offer a retirement plan and I'm, you know, dealing with, you know, other inflated costs for my business, well, I can actually offer a retirement plan as a small business owner and then to get a tax credit from the federal government, which enables me to offer a comprehensive benefit, which goes back to my ability to attract and retain top talent.
That's an important piece of information. Thank you for sharing that. So I know you've given us the website a few times, but where can our listeners go for more information? And those that you just gave us about the government being able to help offset the costs, is there also a place to go to get that information?
Yeah, so if you go to adp.com/small business, you can get more information about all the different resources that ADP is providing to the small business community today. And you could also go to adp.com/spark. Which, you know, we provide different news articles around what is, you know, taking place within, you know, both small and large organizations today. And the last one, which is unique to ADP, is we have our own research institute. And we have our chief economist, Neela Richardson, who, you know, posts articles and blogs and even has a podcast called Main Street Macro. And you could find all of that at adpri.org to provide as much resources to both the small business community and large businesses as possible here at ADP.
Aaron Stark, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and giving us some information on small businesses and how we can stay relevant.
Well, thank you so much, Carol. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You too as well. Take care.
You too.
And okay, we are out of time. I got to let everybody go, but here's your words of wisdom for the week. When the power of love overcomes the power of the world, we will know peace. Jimi Hendrix, make it a good week. Play it forward.
Your gas light's on. You need to fill up.
Gas around here is too expensive.
Don't drive all over searching for the lowest prices. Just download the free Upside app and get cash back for every gallon of gas you buy. I've already made around $200.
You can make that kind of cash back just for buying